Are you ready to open your private practice this summer and make the leap into entrepreneurship? Introducing Make the Leap, our new offering by the Successful Nurse Coaches. Make the Leap is a four-month group coaching program that is designed to help you create your first paid client. Join our experienced lead coaches, Sean and Amy, as they guide you through the Successful Nurse Coach method, helping you create your first paid client in 30 days or less. Not only will you get access to our course that teaches you all the things on how to create clients in a non-icky way, we'll also be personalized mentorship, weekly group calls, and actionable steps to launch your business from just beginning into the paid coach club. Since we are not running new mentorship groups this summer, we didn't want to leave those of you who are ready to begin hanging out in space waiting for the next group to start. This group is a great way for new coaches who have yet to begin their coaching practice or for coaches who have five paid clients or less. This is the most affordable way to work with our team, so be sure to check out the link in the bio. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me on Facebook.
Welcome to the Successful Nurse Coach Podcast. On this podcast, Laura
and Shelby, both board-certified nurse coaches, show you how to make as much money as you want in private practice as a nurse coach.
Hello and welcome back, everybody, to the Successful Nurse Coach Podcast. It is Shelby here today. I am flying solo. I am officially recording, I think, the right way now. Shout out to our podcast support crew, Sue and Jacob, for being endlessly patient while I figure out camera settings and podcast recording settings. It continues to be an adventure over here, team, and it truly takes a village to get a podcast off the ground. But I'm here solo today to talk to you about this idea of fun. And how do we infuse fun just like not into our life, like not in the concept of how do we do more work so that you can have more fun, but how do we learn to have fun in our work? How do we infuse fun, infuse enjoyment, infuse like enjoying the process into what we do? And I think that as entrepreneurs and as nurse coaches, fun more than ever is just so critical, so important, so crucial to the creation process, and often something that gets overlooked, especially with conditioning about hard work and that you have to grind yourself into the ground to earn rest and to earn fun. And I really kind of want to flip the script here that fun is not something that you have to earn. Fun can exist in all areas of your life, regardless if you've done any work or not. And I think that fun is really clean fuel for your tank. It is clean fuel for the longevity of your business. It is not laced with shame or guilt inherently. I think that we can put our own judgments in there, but fun at its core concept is not sticky. It is not something that we have to sell our soul for. It is just something that we are inherently worthy of. And I've been reading this book called Hidden Potential by Adam Grant. And he's a bit of a guru in the coaching world, in the psychology world. So he's written many books, but the first one I'm cracked into is called Hidden Potential. And I think that it is so, it's just like such a good read for new entrepreneurs because he's teaching you how to learn, how to be great. And his point in this book is not necessarily like that people that achieve great things aren't born with a special gene to be. Some prodigies are, right? But he's really focusing on this book about how you intake information and how you integrate information and your relationship with failure and your just tenacity to learn and evolve and to grow and have the process be something that you fall in love with rather than the outcome. So I want to talk to you guys a little bit deeper about that today. I think that there are some concepts in this book that could be really helpful for our community that have been just building some scaffolding for me in my own work. Last year, I
set a goal. I put a dollar amount on fun last year, and I put it like a crazy number. It was $50,000. I was like, I want to spend $50,000 on having fun. And as a refresher, I had a baby last year, so that was an experience. I was still in pursuit of having fun and dreaming up creative ways to have fun and to enrich my life. And to be honest, there are a lot of ways that you can burn $50,000 really quickly, but it honestly made me pause and be like, okay, well, how do I define fun? Where do I find fun? I'm really good at having big fun, like big trips and luxurious trips. And like, I could go through it really quickly. But like, what about the little fun in everyday life? Like, how do I tap into fun and enjoyment just every day on my workday? What can I classify as fun? What are the little moments I'm looking forward to? How do I bring joy and how do I cultivate it? And in the chapter in Adam Grant's book, where he talks about, I think it's like chapter 4 or something like that, he's talking about transforming the process of the hustle. He really brings in these concepts of like deliberate play and harmonious passion and the importance of taking a break. And I really want to like shine a light on those things. And if you want a deep dive, Adam Grant's book could probably be on your doorstep this evening, thanks to Amazon. So I'm going to read from my notes here for a second, but deliberate play, Adam Grant defines this as a structured activity that is designed to make skill development enjoyable, blending deliberate practice and free play. Incorporating play in even the most mundane moments can help prevent burnout. With deliberate play, it is easier to sustain and achieve greater things. So he gives three examples in the book, which I will cover here in a second. But like, deliberate play is an actual psychological term. It's not something that's made up by a, you know, nobody guru on Instagram. It's a proven concept that has data behind it, which I think can be helpful for our nursey brains. And he even gives medical like terminology and examples in his book, one of which being that he mentioned a study to where they brought improv classes into medical schools. And it was an improv class so that the medical students could learn how to read facial cues and read body language. And the improv class was people shouting made up words and then their colleagues trying to guess what they were talking about, trying to put together the clues and like how they were acting it out and their body language and their, you know, facial expressions. And people who participated in this class did better on patient examinations. They were able to better identify a patient's chief complaint and have more empathy for their concerns. So as healthcare professionals, we know the importance of these things and how just like this silly game of charades can really actually make you better at being a better healthcare professional kind of like blew my mind. Also too, as I was reading the book, I was like, well, that's kind of cool, but like a lot of us are looking to get out of bedside care. How does this relate to our world now? Like in the world of coaching and supporting people, but then also like proposals and invitations into to coaching sessions. Like, how does this translate to skills? And he gave an example about sales. I know we have a lot of feelings about the word sales, but I want to encourage you to hang in there with me for a second. So sales, they had an exercise where someone was holding a box. You don't know what's in the box. And then your partner comes up to you and starts asking you about the things that are in the box. And you like play this game to see and ask questions and to hold dialogue with somebody for 3 minutes straight without letting the conversation drop. So what I pieced together here is that they were playing like a game of ultimate curiosity, that there is no answer. You're just endlessly curious about what's in the box and if you can figure it out. And then they tracked them over the next month. They then sold tickets to a sporting event, and the group that participated in the box exercise sold 43% more because they have the ability to connect with people and talk to people. And they just have like this fun practice of like, what's in the box? And being curious. Deliberate play teaches that the real outcome is your enjoyment and not what you can achieve. And I want to take a minute there to like let that sink in, that deliberate play teaches that the real outcome is your enjoyment, not the achievement. And as nurse coaches, as entrepreneurs, I think that it's really easy to get sucked into comparison game here, or the black and white. How many people have I talked to? How many people have I invited? How many proposals have I done? How many powerful conversations have I held? How many people have I told what a nurse coach is? And not that those things are not important, because they are, but it's really easy to get bored of those exercises and the fun to just like deflate out of it, especially when you're just repeating the same things over and over and over and over and over. And I think that being able to find a way to be in love with the skill itself rather than the outcome of the skill, because honestly, team, like outcome of sales is not really up to you. We have some things that support you through that process, but at the end of the day, it is your client's decision to continue working with you or not. Falling in love with the outcome is setting ourselves up for some pretty epic disappointment versus like, can I just focus on getting really good at talking about a box for 3 minutes and then seeing how that translates into your sales skills. I was thinking too, like, how can we incorporate this as a community? Like, how can we practice this skill? And I am open for suggestions, team. I did take some time to sit and like percolate and think, and I'm hoping that by sending this out into the universe, someone has like a struck of lightning idea that they would be willing to share. But maybe it is the box exercise, or maybe it is we play some sort of connection game with one another, or 20 questions or something, just to fuel the curiosity. I'm open for suggestions there. So if you have one, let me know, shoot me a message, put it in the comments. I would love to hear if this spurs anything for you. Also, too, I want to offer a quick little story of my own here of whenever I was a new nurse coach doing proposals. My coach at the time, this isn't a dig, it just was. Like, she gave us a process on how to do sales. It was helpful and did lay a strong foundation for me, but there was no debrief process of like, well, what went well, what went wrong? And I was just like so new and so green. Like, honestly, I wasn't really even thinking about it. However, after sales calls, after proposals, I would call my brother. Shout out to my brother, Ryan. He was working at Mattress Firm at the time, also in sales. And I would just talk to him about like, oh, then they said this and that caught me so off guard. And then I didn't know what to say. And then I felt so stupid and so silly and like all of these things, right? I would debrief. It was like debriefing after a critical event in the hospital, of just having somebody listen and validate my experience. I was able to learn. Selling mattresses and selling coaching are different, albeit similar in the sense that people are paying for something at the end of it. But just having somebody listen and be like, yeah, that is weird, or what a weird thing you did say, or why did your client say that, was just so helpful. And I think influenced a lot of like our process now in the Successful Nurse Coaches, of giving you guys a process, especially for the first 10 to 20 proposals that you do, of sitting down and reflecting of like, this went really well. That did not go great. This was kind of a red flag for me, and I'm not sure if I would want to work with this person, but this was a really big green flag, and I really want to work with this person. Those things are helpful to be able to reflect on. So deliberate play. Second term here is harmonious passion. Harmonious passion. So Adam defines it in the book as taking joy in a process rather than feeling pressure to achieve an outcome. You are no longer practicing under the specter of should. I should be making a social media post. I should be coaching. I should be. But you are drawn to the want. You're drawn to the want and the desire. I feel like coaching. I feel like making a post. I feel like hosting a workshop. And this can be a little tricky, because I think that feelings can be a little bit confusing, and feelings can be a source of resistance as well. But if we can show up for the things that feel easy, do that first, and you'll likely build momentum into doing things that are less easy or less intuitive or less natural for you. But harmonious passion of letting go of the shoulds, showing up to the want and desire. I would say that in your first year of being a nurse coach, you are cultivating the want and desire to do the trickier things, like inviting people to a coaching call and coaching powerfully and doing proposals and coaching people for long term. You are building that skill. But notice the difference there of like, I should. I had a mentorship call last week where one of my clients was discouraged by her lack of movement in the last week. And she really, really needed like a break. She really needed some rest. She had some space for rest and she took it. However, she was feeling a little down and out on herself that she should have been doing more. And for those of you who have watched the show Ted Lasso, you know where I'm going with this. But I asked her, I was like, Sally, have you watched the show Ted Lasso? And she said no. And I told her the story about how whenever Ted Lasso is a show about soccer or football, for those of you who don't know, and he's the coach. And whenever his players like kick a goal and miss or shoot for the goal and miss or kick the post or kick the ball into the stands, he pulls them over to the side and he just doesn't shame them. He doesn't guilt them. He just says, be a goldfish. And what he means by that is forget about it. Move on, be a goldfish. Goldfish are notorious for having like 3-second memories. So take this moment and just forget it. There is an essence to this, right? To where we are learning from our movement or lack of movement, and then also not getting bogged down with our own self-criticism and self-judgment. And the more we can lean into like, this is happening for me. I did take a break last week and I'm ready to get back on the horse, whatever that means. And the getting back on the horse could mean like, I'm going to continue to take a break, but like let go of the guilt and the shame. That would be also qualifying as moving forward. It's hard to count it as a break if we are adding all of this extra weight onto our lap. So that leads me into my final point here is that taking a break is productive. Similar, rest and fun are not things that you have to earn. They're things that are just a given right. I think that we have been conditioned as a society to just work and push and should our way through hard times. And I have to go to work because even though I'm sick or I can't take a break because of this, there will always be something to do. And the reality is that if you are sick, the world keeps spinning. I promise. The world will keep going with or without you. So take a rest when you need it. And in the book, Adam Grant even talks about this. He proves a point that time away helps sustain harmonious passion. Remember, harmonious passion is taking joy in the process rather than feeling pressure to achieve an outcome. Taking breaks unlock fresh ideas because we are processing so much information so quickly. Allowing your subconscious to rest and digest and to take it all in, even if you're not actively thinking about it. This is why sleep is so critical to where, like, if you're trying to solve a problem and then you go, like, take a nap and you come back and the problem is way easier to solve than it was before, it's because you were tired and you needed more inner bandwidth to be able to solve it. This is often why I think my best ideas come to me, like, in the shower, you know? Because I'm not doing anything else. I'm not multitasking. I'm monotasking on washing my hair. And then the idea comes. And taking breaks deepens your learning. It deepens the integration. I was also on a mentorship call this morning where we were talking about the loop of being and taking endless certifications and doing always like kind of like filling our time and schedule with busyness. And there is a time and a place, team, to where like where you will be in an inhale and where you take in information and you're learning a new skill and you're doing all these new things. But then there also comes a point in time where you have to put all of that learning into work, that we have to learn to also love to integrate the process. And I think that's where a lot of folks can get stuck in their own personal development journey, is that we're just on the information. Inhale, you can intellectualize, you can quote Brené Brown all live long day, but if you are not sitting down and doing the work yourself, if you are not integrating, if you are not shifting your way of being in the world, then what is it for? What is it for? I don't want to like cast too much judgment here, because I think that all of you listening to me talk right now are on the path to try and be better and to be more in line and to feel more authentic. I really truly believe that we are all on the path, and there are parts of that path that are different in the beginning than they are in the middle than it is in the end. But if we are always filling every free moment that we have with new, with information, we are always consuming, and then there is no time to integrate, to actually shift our relationships, to have more love, more peace, more harmony, then the learning becomes like meh. It's not like as fun, you know, the drive to keep going if there's no payoff starts to dwindle. So take a break, deepen your learning, deepen your integration. I also want to, he mentions one more thing in this chapter. I'm telling you, this is only one chapter of the book. It's so good. I would take time to read it if I were you. I love how I just recommended to do that after I just told you to stop learning. So actually follow your heart. Do what you need. I'm going to tell you the rest of what's in chapter four. All right. So he even talks about obsession, right? Of like, that obsession leads us to rest, or leads us to see rest as we are taking our foot off the gas, only resting when we are just completely exhausted and completely spent, that we've completely earned it. Now I can rest because I'm so tired. I don't have anything else to give, and now I'm going to rest. Versus harmonious passion, it's easier to know when to rest and refuel, right? So he has this visual in the book of like, you only, it's of a gas tank. And one of the pictures, the gas tank is on empty. And he's like, that's what obsession leads to. Your gas tank gets to empty, and then you can rest, right? Because you have to. There's nothing else to give. Versus harmonious passion, you might rest around like the half tank, the quarter tank, the three-quarter tank, because you know that rest is going to fill your tank back up, and you can keep going on a full tank rather than needing to take a big, long, gigantic rest because your tank is on empty. Studies show that obsession with your work, putting in longer hours, doesn't actually equate to more success or better performance. Womp, womp. Studies show that obsession does not equal better success or more success or better performance, and that you are more likely to fall into emotional and physical exhaustion, risking burnout or bore out. Bore out, B-O-R-E, out, which is emotional exhaustion that accumulates when you are overloaded. It's like you become, bore out is when you're understimulated from like just the emotional deadening that happens when nothing is exciting, when life is repetitive, when the task, when you're just forcing and shooting yourself through a task. And you're working so hard that you drive out the joy. That's a bummer, right? Bore out. Has anybody else heard that word? But I kind of want to make this real for all of you. From the bore out to, I keep feeling like I'm saying Borat. I know I'm not, but now you probably won't be able to unhear that either. From the bore out to the boredom to the obsession. And I want to paint a picture for you for how I see this in real life. So people come in to our programs to learn how to create clients, to learn how to create a lucrative practice. And their goal is to have, you know, a six-figure practice or beyond. And that is a wonderful goal to have. It's great that we have somewhere to calibrate our compass. But oftentimes the only measure of success or perceived success is the dollar amount in your bank account. And for even our highest performers over the years, people who do hit the six figures in the first year of business, they often get to that number and they look around and are like, wait, I don't feel like I thought I was going to feel. When does the happiness kick in? Turns out six figures really isn't that much money, especially when we're paying taxes on six figures. You know, like there's all of this secondary, like what the F moment that happens as a result of all of this achieving. And something that I feel like we as a successful nurse coach team drive so intensely home with all of our clients is you have to learn to enjoy the process, right? And whenever we're leaning into joy and leaning into falling in love with building our skills, and I know it sounds a little like Pollyanna here and like Shelby's putting a positive twist on everything, but whenever we learn to fall in love with the art of connecting and with the privilege to invite people to a conversation, we get to romanticize the process more than it just being so clinical and check boxes. And there will be seasons where I'm going to look at you if you're my client and just say, do it anyway. Like, your feelings are getting in the way here. We know you need to do this thing. I know you have a big goal and vision. Stop holding yourself back. And then there will also be seasons to where I ask you to slow down and to do less and to fall in love with the present moment right here, right now. Because if we don't learn to fall in love with the present moment when you're making $35,000 a year, you're not going to magically find it along the way when you hit 100K a year. It's not something that is gifted to you at the $100,000 mark. It is something that is earned through your own reflection, through your own connection, through your ability to cultivate joy in your life and not just in business, right? If you had a six-figure practice today, what else would you be doing with your time? And go do more of that. If you are floating down the river or hiking or gardening or raising mini ponies, whatever the passion is outside of work, if you can tap into that now, if you are painting or drawing or writing or I'm looking at my plants in the background over there. Like, if you are a plant mom, like, go do more of that as much as you can now, because it will put clean fuel in the tank for all of the moments to come. For me, this over the years has looked like I really do enjoy traveling. I do enjoy adventuring and doing new things with little kids. That has been challenging, not impossible, but definitely different than before we had kids. And I find like little moments of joy now of like being able to tap out of my computer at every day, almost every day at 3 p.m. and walk downstairs and like cook dinner for my family and have dinner together. And whenever I get to ask my oldest like what the best part of her day was and the worst part of her day was, being able to put my baby to sleep every night and not miss bedtime, being able to read books over and over again to my five-year-old, like these little moments that mean so much to me have taken 5-6 years to cultivate. They are repetitive moments. They are moments that happen every single day. And if I'm not paying attention, they can start to feel a little boring. However, it doesn't take much to recalibrate my focus of like, this is the life that you wanted. Like, this is the life that you left the hospital for so that you didn't have to work until 8 p.m. and come home after the kids were asleep and be foggy and fall right into bed. Like, you wanted these intentional little moments, and they're here. And they're here. So don't miss them. I also like have this image burned into my brain of whenever my husband takes our five-year-old to preschool in the morning. And like the sunrise hits our glass door, our front door, just at the right spot every morning when they're leaving. And like, there's just something so special about like giving her a hug before she leaves for school, telling her to have a good day and that I'm so excited to see her when she gets home. Like, those are the little moments of motherhood that like fuel my business so endlessly, because I don't want to give that up, right? I want to be able to be here to witness, to see every moment from here until she leaves and moves out for college or whatever comes next, which is like freaking me out to even think about. Parents to teenagers, send me advice. but I hope I'm getting my point here across of finding the joy in the everyday. What would you be doing if your business was already taken care of? And go do more of that. Go have more fun. Go sit on your back patio and watch the sunset and take it in and slow down and move at the pace of nature and of spirit. And I don't want to get too rambly into left field here, but just do more that brings you peace, and the peace will overflow here into your business. All right, team. That's my rant for today. That actually ended up being way longer than I thought. I'm proud of myself. But if you would like to come hang out with us in our Facebook group, come find us, the Successful Nurse Coaches. Tell me how you are going to slow down, incorporate more fun, decondition from the hustle, and let us know how we can support you. All right, team. Same time, same place next week. Bye.